The Home Show with Sinead Ryan on News Talk.
Hello and you're very welcome to the latest episode of the Home Show podcast. I'm your host, Sinead Ryan. Coming up today, television presenter and co-founder of Lennon Courtney Homeware, Brendan Courtney, on his fabulous home renovation in County Wicklow. We'll be finding out how a Cork-based startup is recycling decommissioned wind turbine blades into outdoor furniture and bridges. The architect whose company has been chosen to participate in Venice Architecture Festival's Time Space Existence joins me in studio and show regular Paul Kinsler on revamping your utility room. If you'd like to get in touch with the Home Show podcast, you can email us anytime during the week at thehomeshow@newstalk.com. I'm open on Instagram and X if you want to find me there. I know lots of people like to send in queries and questions and suggestions for guests and topics. We love to hear them and we'll always try to incorporate them where we can. Now, never mind the downstairs loo in my house. The smallest room is the utility room. I even had to get rid of my tumble dryer to try and free up some space in there a couple of years ago. And now I've a very boring set of shelves and it's still a dump room. So the bank holiday, which we love here on the Home Show, especially if it's one that we can expect a little bit of fine weather, is also a great opportunity to get a bit of DIY done. So I'm really looking forward to some advice from Paul Kinsler later on. It's not selfish at all, I promise you, but there's no point in me having top designers on the show if I can't get a few tips from them myself. Well, luckily, he'll be sharing them with us all. And I hope you'll stay with me for the next hour. Pour yourself another cup of coffee and settle in for the Home Show. Now, if you're on Instagram or anywhere near a television, you will have spotted a television presenter and co-designer of Lennon Courtney Homeware, Brendan Courtney, renovating his magnificent bungalow in County Wicklow. He recently relocated from Dublin to the stunning seaside home, having sold a flat in London to fund the move, and he joins me now to tell me all about it. Brendan, you're very welcome back to the Home Show.
Delighted to be here. Thank you so much.
Now, before we talk about your new home, you did have some very sad news since we last spoke to you. Your beloved mum died at Christmas time last year. Listeners will remember the fabulous Nuala from the brilliant documentary you did on dementia. It was a very, very sad thing. Was it peaceful, Brendan?
Dementia is a very cruel disease, isn't it? And it came on very quickly. So she was very sick for the sort of last, I suppose, 6 months. And so with good palliative care, eventually it all ended. But it was a bumpy end, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Great
yeah.
care in the Navan Road Nursing Home were brilliant people. But it's just a very difficult time. And she died like literally 2 days before Christmas, 3 days before Christmas. So it was a strange time. But yeah, I mean, she's amazing and her memory lives on. And it's part of life now, really. My dad had gone in 2017. So it's a familiar trail you follow again, you know?
Indeed, sad, indeed. Yeah. And we all get to the stage and hopefully are well into our own adulthood when we lose our parents. And I know that's not the case for everybody. So lovely, lovely memories of Nuala there. Now, in happier news, tell us a little bit about this project. First of all, what prompted a move from the Big Smoke?
So, well, for full disclosure, I haven't fully moved yet. I have literally just done the snags this week, and the final snags are next week, on because it was a complete rebuild. So it was a house in Wicklow Town, little sort of 80s bungalow up on a hill. And I had an apartment in London since 2005. I was very lucky to be able to buy an apartment in London when they were a little more affordable on my own. And so I was just not spending as much time there. The industry has changed since Brexit. Broadcasting in the UK is in a crisis, and also I just wasn't spending any time there, and the horrible C word, COVID, hit, and the flat was empty and it was this money pit.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I'm paying this mortgage on this flat I'm not using. And so I thought, I need to get rid of it. So, it was just, and I work for myself, I'm freelance. So, you know, you're watching every penny and cash flow is tight and I run a business. So I was like, I had to get rid of that. It was like just costing me a fortune every month. So went on the market. It sold really quickly. And it surprisingly, after capital gains, etc., it left me with a a pocket of money I didn't realize I was going to have. And so I thought, right, rather than go around the world like a 24-year-old and just have fun for 6 months, which is what I could have done.
Attractive.
I was very tempted to do. I thought, I don't have a really very solid pension. I'm just one of those flakes and I'm freelance. And I thought, talk to a financial advisor friend of mine, actually Owen McGee is a good pal of mine. And he said, if you could find a little fixer-upper, it would be a good investment. So I'm a designer. I'm very decisive. I know what I like. I really do. But I also am kind of lazy. So I don't commit easily. Right. So, and the builder was like, you're the most decisive person we've ever worked with. And I was like, no, it's budget. I had this cute quantity surveyor on my shoulder, like a little angel or a devil. We used to call her the dream crusher. She's going, no, you can't afford that. No, you can't afford that.
And vibes of Dermot Bannon here.
No, you can't afford that. No, you can't. No, the opposite probably.
Yeah. with his QS. Stop it. Stop it there.
Yeah, exactly.
Enough with the glass.
She was Dermot's QS for a while, actually. Lisa was. And she was very, she'd say, you have this much to do this and this much to do. So I was very, I suppose, prescriptive in what I wanted. So I would go to the bathroom company and go, how much is that? No. Okay, how much is that? Okay, that one. So what I did was, like, I renovated my apartment in Dublin about 7 years ago. And I just stripped it all back and put in a very simple floor. So because it's near the sea, and I'm looking at the sea right now, and that was a big selling point for me because I can see the sea from the back of the house, which is gorgeous. I wanted sort of big sandy cream tiles. Also, this is really silly, but my dog molts like mad. He's a Jack Russell, the hair everywhere, white hair. So I go for paler colours so you can't really see the hair.
Saves you cleaning up.
Well, it's a very interesting logic because it totally works. And then sometimes you blow a corner, you're like a little, and the little sheet of hair rises. You're like, oh, better Hoover. But so I went with simple basics. So really plain, I paint. And actually, you know, got to the end of the build and the builder said, right, we're nearly done. Are you going to paint? And I was like, I don't have a budget for paint, do I? The QS said, you do actually have a small budget for paint. So, but brilliantly, because I hadn't moved in, it wasn't finished, there was no furniture in it. The builder said, look, we have a guy who comes in with a spray gun and he'll paint it two coats in a day.
Go away. So a spray gun.
If you're happy to go with just white.
Okay.
I said, yeah, just do it white.
None of the fancy Farrow and Ball stuff just
no,
yet.
No, I don't like that. Okay. I don't. Again, I can't commit to a colour for a long time. So just do it white. So it's clinical and clean and it's a fresh start. And that's what I did. I did it all white. And because it's near the sea, the white works. I like it. So it was really budget that decided made my decisions large.
Yeah,
even
well.
The windows where there's a bespoke window you can have made, as I'm sure you know, which is unbelievably beautiful. Mm. It's an Irish company that make them. I've been talking to them at length. They're really good people. But the bespoke windows for a small house like this, bespoke windows are like anything from 60 to 80 grand.
I know. Listen, don't talk about windows. They are ferociously expensive. And anytime we've discussed them on the show, like people's eyes pop. Unsurprisingly, there is plenty of Lennon Courtney stock in the house because I saw you showcasing it. Bowls to jugs to candles. So tell me what's in the latest collection.
So we've done this incredible glassware collection, wine glasses, champagne flutes, tumblers and highballs. So they're this essential kit for the summer coming, but they're really cute. They're called the Together Collection, and each glass has a tiny little delicate color on the rim, so you always know which is your glass. And I love them, I'm really proud of them. And then we've done our first ever scented candle collection, 4 scents. 2 are dusk and 2 are dawn, so 2 fresh in morning and 2 are kind of library and cozy evening. And the candles actually took a year and a half to develop, and they're poured in Carlow. Like they're designed and made here in Ireland. I'm really proud of them.
Really good.
So, and then we do this, we use mango wood for our wood bowls, like the big salad bowls, which have a lot of pop of colour lacquer, like a
they're gorgeous, lovely, they're soft coloured wood.
Yeah, and they're mango wood. So mango is kind of disposed of a lot because it's, you know, not a lot of uses for it because it's very light wood. But we use mango wood for all our wood. So it's very sustainably made as well. So yeah, and we've done we do these lanterns for outside, you know, sort of a wooden base with glass surround for the candle so it doesn't blow out. Just lovely stuff. And what I've done is because my place is so white and cream floors and a grey, pale grey couch and a wooden table, the pop of colour really helps give it a bit of life and a bit of personality. Mm. So that it really works for me.
And it's a great way of getting that colour pop onto your table when you want kind of to be changing it all the time, and it's not because it's not going to be too expensive to do that. Now, has your business partner Sonia Lennon visited yet?
No. So what she did do, which was brilliant though, because when I got the house, it was really in a bad way. It had been empty for a few years, and the chimney was falling down and it was all damp. I mean, it was old, and it was like, had to be gutted. And I was calling it my hovel on the hill. And Sonia found a paperback 1970s book called The Hovel on the Hill and sent it to me.
Go away. Oh, so that's
in pride of place here.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Well, I'm sure she'll be round for a champagne flute of something bubbly.
We're going to have a little party, I think, coming into the summer now, because the sun does shine more on the East Coast, definitely.
You're biased now, Brendan Courtney.
100% biased, yes. 100% committed now. I'm in the sea.
Very good. All right. Well, we'll see how you feel after the commute. But anyway, for the moment, it's fine. Now, I know you're planning on living there with your partner, Adam. And I'm just curious about, and I'm worried about the assault that you mentioned, this horrific, terrible experience you had in February after you were assaulted in Dublin City. Now, we won't say too much about it because I understand charges are before the courts, but how are you doing?
I'm good. I live on Usher's Quay in Dublin, and it's between a couple of, three hostels. So it's very busy with a lot of people, a lot of homelessness right on the doorstep. And you're actually living right in the middle of that, which is really tragic, really sad. And places like Merchants Quay Services do incredible work, and I support them all the time. And when I turned 50, living like this, always people in the doorway taking drugs, and there's always, it's just standard. Mm. And I'm not speaking in any way out of turn. But after that, after the attack, which was really strange, it just made me, I suppose, reevaluate where I want to live, you know, at this age, as I'm going into my 50s now. And do I want sort of a quieter, simpler existence? You know, I don't need the city as I needed it in my 20s and 30s. I love dinner out. I've got my favorite restaurants, but I don't really go to bars or nightclubs anymore. And I will. I'm not ruling it out, you know, but it's not my every weekend like it was. And the reason I moved into town from Tala is because we were sick of paying taxi fare. You know, that was your motivation. And then I moved to London. So it really did. And also, I'm eternally an optimist. That punch in the head kind of snapped me out of myself a little bit. I was very sad about Mom, and just kind of in a bit of a murk, and that slap in the head was like, you're alive, get on with it, stop, watch where you're going, you know. So in a way, I took a little bit of a positive out of it, I suppose. Mm. But you know, it's not ideal. And I would say this, out of, you know, something really horrible like that comes huge kindness. It's overwhelming. I mean, I'm looking at the pile of cards. I've had 14 masses said for me from people all around the country. People have written, the most bizarre and brilliant one was a letter, a card sent to Brendan Courtney, Wicklow, County Wicklow, and it arrived, God bless, on post. And I shared that, and then, hold your breath, I shared that on Instagram, and Sarah Jessica Parker shared it on her Instagram. I know, wow. Nearly exploded. I know, but she loves Ireland, obviously. They have a house in Donegal, apparently. Mm. Mm. She's always tweeting and Instagramming things from Donegal. So, yeah.
So you had a fanboy opportunity.
What can you find the positives in the negatives. That's my motto.
Do you know what? And you're obviously resilient and strong. And as you say, the ability to turn a negative into a positive, into a glimmer of light, is a trait that, you know, will serve anybody well in life. So
I have a message, though, a very important message. I was doing an event yesterday, and I'm saying this at all the events. The world is being divided with hate and lies, as we know, and it's unregulated, as we know. And so broadcasting, like you're doing, even regulated broadcasting is so important. But coming into June, because of the divide in our culture that it seems to be simmering up, I really would urge everybody to get out to their local pride and just wave a flag and show support and show allyship. Mm. Ireland is an amazing country of inclusiveness. And I think we really just, pride is a really good opportunity to show that inclusiveness. And we need our allies now as we face into the next few years of what divisiveness is ahead of us. So that's what my message is. Just wave a flag of pride for us, please.
Will do. And listen, the very best to you and Adam in your new home. Is this your forever home? Will they be doing keys to your life, Brendan, if you were the subject of this? Would this be your final pitching up place?
No, I don't think so.
Oh.
Could you tell you why? Shocking. I really enjoyed the process.
You see,
and I kind of think,
you've got the bug now.
I'm ready to go again. Like, I love the process. If I could afford to in a few years, I might. think about doing it again.
Oh, right. There you go.
So it could be, but I see, and I'll leave you one final thought. I ran out of money before I could extend. I really wanted to just extend the living room. So I ran out, like literally the budget went bananas, as you know, these things happen. But so it's not finished. And I have started doing the garden as well. So yeah, lots to do on it. It's still ongoing, but I did enjoy the hobby side of it, of picking things and, you know, managing things. And so yeah, I might do it again.
Well, there you go. And maybe Len and Courtney will have an interiors design branch after all of this. Brent and Courtney, I'm delighted to hear you're doing well and that all is good with you. And congratulations on the new home and thanks for telling us all about it on The Home Show.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Now, a very interesting story coming up now. Dr. Angie Nagle is co-founder of a Cork-based startup, Blade Bridge, that is turning decommissioned wind turbine blades into outdoor furniture and bridges for Ireland's expanding Greenway network. And Angie joins me now. You're very welcome along to The Home Show, Angie.
Thanks, Sinead. Good to talk to you.
I first kind of came across your company when I spotted a most unusual seating area around a new one outside a shopping centre near where I live. It's not like immediately obvious. It's made from a wind turbine blade, but it was so unusual in design that I went over to have a look at it and found your name on it, your badge on it, Blade Bridge. And I was very interested to see how you came up with the idea for the company in the first place.
Yeah, excellent. So that installation was commissioned by South Dublin County Council and it's in Rathfarnham. And I'd encourage everybody to go there. It's on the corner of Marion Road and Orchard Lane, right, near the Super Value. So that's our latest install. So I'll give you some background on our company. So we're a spin-out from a research group called Rewind, which looked at repurposing of decommissioned wind turbine blades. So this was identified as a problem maybe 8 years ago or so. Probably some people in the industry knew it was going to be a problem, but it wasn't sort of really on the public radar yet. But that when wind farms are decommissioned, the rest of the wind farm can be recycled, but the blades don't have any recycling options that are commercially viable. So when wind farms are decommissioned, everything else is recycled, but the blades are there left. So in the States, there's tons of blades that are being landfilled at the moment. In Germany, they're grinding them up and turning them into cement, but none of these options are really ideal, given that the blades were generating renewable energy, and that's really, you know, the area that we want to be working in. So we came up with the idea of repurposing the blades. We generated in the research group 60, 70 different ideas, anything from bridges to sound barriers to floating solar panels to planters and seating. So lots and lots of different ideas. And what we found is we needed a product, you know, a good product fit for what we were working on. And with the Greens, in government for the last, you know, several years, the cycling networks were being developed. So we knew there's about 3,000 kilometers of cycleways that are going to be developed in the coming years. That's 1,000 additional pedestrian bridges that would be built. And so we thought this is a really good match. So, yes.
So, and it is a good match because these things, first of all, they're absolutely ginormous. I mean, what's the length of a wind turbine blade?
So they range, and like we're working right now with tiny little ones that are 13 meters long.
13 meters, okay.
Yeah, and those are the smallest ones, and there's only a few of those around. And also 20 meter blades we're working with. But we're expecting to see, you know, we've been contacted for blades up to 58 meters in length.
Wow.
We're not quite yet able to handle blades of that length, but we are starting to work with blades that are 25 meters in length and possibly up to like 33, 35 meters.
Now, I understand that a lot, the wind farms in Ireland are still too new in one sense, so they're not being decommissioned or recommissioned just yet. So where do you get the blades from?
That's right. Yeah. So yeah, there's only been one farm in Ireland and it was in Northern Ireland that's been decommissioned so far, but we're expecting that many more will be decommissioned soon. So we're trying to prep ourselves for that. So in general, we're getting blades that have been damaged, like either from you know, we had six blades that had caught on fire after maintenance. We have a couple others that were damaged or just not in balance that were never actually installed. So there's sort of one-off blades that we're dealing with right now. So yeah, with a 20 meter blade, we can make, you know, either a full shelter or maybe 6-8 pieces of furniture. So there's a lot, lot of material in these blades.
I'm curious about how you transport these things. Yeah. Like, do you chop them up before you get them or are they transported as is?
So anything under 20 meters, so the 13 meter blades we could transport to our site, which is in North Cork near Bottle Hill. And we can transport a 13 meter blade full without needing an escort, a police escort. Once you get over, or any extra permitting. So once you get over about 20 meters, depending on the transport company you're working with, you might need permits and that costs a lot more. Anything like, so yesterday we cut up our first 25 meter blade and we cut it into four pieces to make transport easier. And that's in general, any blade over 20 meters, that's what we'll be doing is going on site and cutting it up.
So how does it work then economically? Do you buy the blades or do the company getting rid of them kind of pay you to take them away?
The company pays us to get rid of them. If we're like our ideal customer is a company, a company, a wind farm owner that has blade material that they want to get rid of, that also needs items built for them. So some furniture or
fully circular.
Yeah, exactly. And that's our perfect customer really. And then we don't charge them anything for the blade. But what we do is like, we're working on a fabulous project right now. I won't say who the customer is yet, but it's repurposing one full blade into a memorial for a colleague. And it's for the same company. So it's perfect in that it's you know, a company can say they've used their own waste. So we really look for like to talk to wind farms who we talk to them first about what products they could build. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of wind farms that are building say bridges or cycling infrastructure, walking infrastructure around their wind farms or will be developing infrastructure on the wind farms that they're currently building, and they can use old blades from another wind farm on a new development. So that's when it's really exciting, is that when it gets more and more circular.
It is indeed. And it is fully circular then, because as you said at the beginning, it's ironic if you're, you know, landfilling the very infrastructure that you're creating green energy with.
Exactly,
so it's much better to use it. When do you expect, Angie, the first decommissioned Irish wind farm to become available?
Anyone's guess.
Oh, so right. Okay.
It's really, it has to do with the planning permission, like planning, a lot of the repowering planning is getting delayed. Now I know Kilgarvan wind farm, they just announced that they had planning permission for repowering, but I mean, it still could be another say 3 years or more before that happens.
Okay. Well, we'll be very interested to see what other inventive ideas you have for repurposing them. It's a super project. I just loved seeing it and it was so unusual. Now, where can people find out more and get a look at some of those projects?
Yes, absolutely. So our Instagram is Bladebridge and our website is bladebridge.ie for sure. Put the IE in. And there's, you can visit Ackle Sound. We've got a set of furniture and some shelters in Ackle Sound on the greenway there. Rathfarnham is where our other development is. And there is a electric bike charging hub in a library in Galway also near the ATU campus, I believe. So, yeah, so go to our website or our Instagram site.
Right. And otherwise, if you pass one of these things, folks, you're not going to miss it. I mean, they're very, very unusual. Angie Nagel, co-founder of that startup called Bladebridge, continued success. And thanks for joining us on The Home Show. Now, I'm joined now by Gareth Brennan of Brennan Furlong Architects, the only Irish architects who were chosen to participate in the European Architecture Festival Time, Space, Existence, which takes place in Venice this year, organised by the European Culture Centre. Their exhibit focuses on 8 of their residential projects around Howth and is highlighting the rich historical and geographical nature of Howth. Gareth, very welcome to the studio.
Thanks very much, Sinead.
Why Howth?
I suppose it's an area we know quite well. We've done a lot of work in the area And when we were approached by the organisers of the exhibition, it kind of struck us as an area that we would like to use to explore some of the ideas that we wanted to convey, you know, as part of our submission to the exhibition.
Now, a lot of these are residential products, so projects. So these are clients that have come to you to say, do something fabulous with this property. Tell us about some of the properties involved. I particularly liked the Origami House.
Oh, yeah.
And this was a beautiful project inspired, I believe, by your client had spent some time in Japan.
They had, yeah. So in that case, the client was from Hoth herself. And so she was coming back home. You know, they had lived in Portmarnock for a few years, and herself, her husband and their two children were moving back to her home village. And so when they found the house, I mean, it's a very small house right in the village. They were built about 1900. And it had been relatively poorly extended in the past. And the site kind of was, it was a tricky site. It was very narrow. It was cranking and steep. And the client's daughter had gone to Japan for as part of one of her years of university, and they had gone over to see her for 3 weeks or something like that. And they came back just overflowing with ideas about how you might use a tight space like this. They were kind of fascinated with the hotel rooms they'd stayed in.
And, of course, the Japanese being masters at space because they've so little of it.
Yeah, yeah. And that was then, we were able to apply that, I suppose, to the property they'd bought in Hoth.
Yeah, and this was a very small property. About 1,100 square feet in
it
old
was,
money.
Yeah, yeah. But that even included an extension which had been added in the 1990s.
Right.
So the original house was probably only about 600 square feet.
Yeah, yeah. So lots of that kind of clean, pale wood finishes, vertical panelling where possible.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, a lot of the focus was on minimising the detail in the house because when spaces are that small, you know, a lot of detail can create clutter and visual clutter, and it just creates, you know, I suppose it eliminates the ability to feel calm in the space.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of work on minimizing the details. So we used shadow gaps instead of skirting boards. We eliminated the door handles on the doors along the hall to create these recessed handles that don't jut out and distract your eyeline as you look through.
Yeah. Tiny little tips, really, that you can kind of incorporate into a home. Things that you wouldn't think create a distraction visually, but they do.
Well, I think it's the sum of the parts, really, you know, that when all of those things are either considered or not considered, the cumulative impact can be quite strong.
Now, one of the other homes that you have looked at is a project called Four Winds. Mm-hmm. Now, this is quite different. It even has, I don't know what you'd call it, like a turret, an eagle's nest at the very top of it in a column. Talk to me about that one. That won an award for you already.
It did, yeah. So that that was the project that it gained a bit of, I suppose, international traction on a couple of architectural websites, and that's where the opportunity to exhibit in Venice came from. The organisers contacted us on foot of having seen Four Winds. So that turret, as you call it, is the home office for the clients. And
I don't know how they get any work done. You'd be completely distracted looking out there.
It was, again, what we loved about this was it was the client's grandparents' home. So it was a family who'd been abroad and had come back home and really come back home. And they wanted to respect the original house and retain the sense because she remembered being there as a child running through the garden and everything like that. So we wanted to keep, you know, those elements for her, but then adapt it as was needed to serve their uses.
Some lovely ideas. And for anybody really going about designing a project like that or having bought maybe an older house, we'd Brendan Courtney on at the top of the show, who's bought this 80s three-bed bungalow down in Wicklow and it's completely revamped. What would you advise people to do when faced with something that they want to really utterly redesign?
I suppose it's a case of trying to break it down. So just calmly or as calmly as possible to kind of go, right, what do I want this building to do? How do I want to live in this building? You know, how do I live my daily life? And as we say to a lot of clients, it's not necessarily about, you know, the set piece once a year, family over for Christmas. It has to be, you know, how you're going to use the house on a Tuesday afternoon.
Mm.
And that the spaces are designed to allow the house function, you know, if there's just one person in the house by themselves or if there is a larger group, so that there's flexibility built into the layout and that, you know, so it responds specifically to, you know, your criteria rather than a generic criteria.
Yeah, because you can get kind of carried away with the wow factor
or
the bling or the flash but actually you need to live in it every single day.
And I think if you take that approach, you will enjoy it because the house will do what you need it to do, and you'll, nearly without realizing it, you'll feel calmer, you'll feel more relaxed, you'll feel more at home.
Yeah.
And you can build into that the kind of, you know, some elements of the wow as well.
Yeah.
You know, but they could be quiet moments too.
Now, talk to me about the exhibit in Venice. Time, Space, Existence is the name of it. And the theme this year is Repair, Regenerate and Reuse. How does that work for you? Like, what did you have to create for it? And do you have to go over? I mean, wouldn't it be great to spend 6 months in Venice? You're probably not going to do that. But talk to me a little bit about what it means.
So when we looked at the theme and we considered our work and how we wanted to convey it, and we looked at Howth because a lot of our work in Howth is very much informed by a lot of the mythology and the history that Howth has. And there's an awful lot, you know, Howth is quite an enigmatic place because there's a lot of legends and there's a lot of conflicting stories about how things are the way they are. And we really enjoyed a lot of that. So, for example, the title of our exhibition is called The Memory of a Site. And the rationale for that was there was an excavation done in the 1960s of a 6,000-year-old remnant of human occupation. And somebody had written a thesis on it, and they called it the thesis, The Memory of a Site. And we quite liked that because it spoke in two ways. There was obviously, because the site is now gone, there's 1970s housing estate over it. Mm. There is the memory of that site that was there before, but the site itself almost had a memory, if you know what I mean. Mm. Because when it was excavated, there was the remnants of the people who lived there. And we just liked the idea of the continuation of human occupation of that landscape. So we tried to convey that, I suppose, examination through our work in Howth, but how that could then be applied to anywhere in the world, so that somebody come to Venice to look at our exhibition can, you know, can enjoy the beauty that Howth has, but then it inspires them to think about where they're from and how they live where they live and how people have lived there for thousands of years before them. And, you know, we tried to create a sense that there is a continuum, and there's a, you know, the people who lived there 6,000 years ago, they looked out at the same landscape as we look at it.
Yeah.
And they had the same concerns and daily worries and happinesses that we have.
And that the homes now are built on their homes.
Exactly. Yeah. We're custodians, effectively.
Yeah.
It's our turn now, but it was their turn, and many years from now, it'll be somebody else's turn. And I suppose we feel that there's a comfort in that as well. And we want the houses that we create to kind of softly or kind of calmly echo that or remind people of that.
Okay, well, every great success with it. Will you get over quite a few times yourself?
I'm going over next week for the launch for a few days. And that's about as much as I could wrangle without a divorce proceedings been served. And,
listen, Venice, I can tell you one way to sort out that.
Well, I think that's on the cards as well.
Right, yeah. Okay. Well, Brennan Furlong's exhibit will be on display in the historic Palazzo Bembo in the heart of Venice from the 10th of May this month until the 23rd of November. So loads and loads of opportunity if you happen to be around that neck of the woods to go and look at it. And further information about the Time Space Existence is on Time Space Existence. And where can people find out more about your projects, Gareth?
Our website is brennanfurlong.ie.
Brilliant.
And there's a lot of the projects on there.
Fantastic. All right. Well, listen, thanks for joining us on The Home Show.
Thanks, Mel Sinead.
Welcome back to The Home Show today with me, Sinead Ryan, on this lovely bank holiday weekend. And, you know, it's a great chance to get a little bit of DIY done. And I was trying to think, if I had my wish list, what would be top of it? Well, mine's a dump room, a place for things that have nowhere else to go and somewhere that I tend to pile up bits and pieces. Yes, I am talking about the utility room. It's the forgotten hidden place in the house where no visitor will ever pry. But we can make it stylish, at least I hope so. Paul Kinsler, interiors doyen and TV presenter, help!
Oh, thank you so much. It's my favourite room and I've only actually recently done mine over.
I saw a reel you put up on Instagram of your utility room and I was gratified to see that it's not one of these vast spaces with cupboards and pantries and walk-ins and all that, because mine is absolutely tiny. So talk to me about the five things we need to think about when we redesign a utility room.
Yeah, so for me, space is really important. And as you said, mine is actually in the corner of my garage. So I had to be really clever with what I wanted to do in that space. So a lot of people are now looking at vertical storage. So actually stacking their washing machine on top of their dryer or vice versa. They're building things like inserting shelves in between that you can pull out so that you can rest your laundry on. So it's really thinking about what the space is going to be used for and trying to do multi-options for it.
Okay, because utility, the very name tells you there's a lot of work going on in this room. You know, it's not just storage. Usually we have our laundry, you know, we have things we want to hang on to, plugs, boxes of things, loads going on there. So what's the first thing that we should do? I suppose clearing it out would be the first thing.
Absolutely. Clearing out and making sure that you have stuff in relevant places that makes sense, because you don't have a fork in your utility room. Well, at least I certainly hope not. Your fork belongs in the fork drawer. So it's making sure that everything has its own space dedicated to itself. I use things like little baskets you can get from the likes of Penny's or IKEA or Jysk. They cost maybe 2 or 3 euro, and it just gives you a great way to organize things into certain baskets and that they live there.
Yes. Now, that said, I tried that and I went so far as to get them all the same colour, and then I labelled them. So I was absolutely delighted with myself when they were empty. They looked really pretty and sat up on the shelf. And then when I started piling things into them, I'd realised I'd labelled them all wrong. So the one with like candles got ended up with screwdrivers and, you know, placemats and all kinds of things in. So maybe I'm just really bad at doing that. So talk to me about the things we should have in a utility room.
Yeah, so in your utility room, for me, I think you need definitely a space. And we're just thinking utility here. So for me, it's all about my laundry. That's where my laundry life lives. So it's everything from your washing pods, your detergents, your little, do you know, the laundry sleeves that go into your tumble dryer. And also maybe your ironing board lives in here. So it's making sure that it's just the right things in it. Because for me, my screwdriver lives definitely in my toolbox.
I know. And sometimes I take things out of somewhere else and I think, oh, now I know where it is. I'll stick it in the utility room. And added to that, I now have to provide space like everybody else in the country for my cans and plastic bottles and in my case, my glass, because that has to be recycled centrally where I live.
Yeah. So I keep bags for that beside the bin, because for me, that's where it works, because we're not throwing it into the bin, but we're throwing it somewhere adjacent. And then it's just trying to bring it into your routine of when you return to the likes of the shopping centre or the news agent to try and return it that way. So that's where I keep that. So that's not in my utility room. I sound very plush, as if I have millions of rooms. I actually don't.
But they're all stylish.
Oh, thank you. One of my favourite little hacks I actually did, because it's one of my pet peeves. I absolutely hate the ironing board.
Oh, so I know. Don't
I found old. I found a mounted ironing board which literally mounts to the wall. So there's no taking it out, putting it back. You literally just fold it down and fold it back up. And what I cleverly did was I hid it behind some artwork so that then it tidies away. You're none the wiser that there's an ironing board there, and it's all pretty.
So it's one like you might find in a hotel sometimes, where you just like a Murphy bed where you pull it down.
Exactly. And it's actually quite a decent size. So I think sometimes I've seen with that the ironing boards can be a bit skinny and a bit pathetic. Mm. And this is actually quite a chunky. It's about 3/4 of your normal length of ironing board. So it did take me a while to find a piece of canvas to build my own art. But once I did it, it was perfection.
Oh, that's such a great idea, because it does take up so much room normally. Now, talk to me a little bit about shelving and the wall design, because, you know, mine is just the most boring shelving in my house, and I've just painted the walls white. So give me some inspo about what we could be doing.
Yeah, so I think for me, again, the baskets are great. And I found lovely kind of wire baskets with rattan handles because they're a bit of a decorative feature. And what I started to do in between some of the baskets was putting in a bit of plants because plants bring a bit of life into the area. And they can be faux because, as we've discussed before, I am a plant killer. So everything on my shelves are faux because then I just forget about it. But it adds just a bit of colour and depth to the wall.
Yeah, and it's a great hack because when you walk in visually, your eyes, and my utility room, like many, I don't have a window, there's no natural light in there, so it would definitely be a plant killer. But actually, I think you're right, it just gives you that burst of green and makes you feel a little bit energised.
Yeah, definitely. And I've also put some artwork, as I said, on the walls because, again, it just makes it feel like a thought about space. Mm. Small little things like this will make it feel like you've thought about it, even though you've probably just thrown a piece or a frame up on the wall. But it's those little touches that kind of bring it to life.
Brilliant. Okay. Now, the walls, I've just painted mine, but you had a great hack for wall tiles that aren't wall tiles.
Yeah, so they're actually stick-on tiles. And I have to say, they are the easiest thing for anybody to use. You just need to be armed with a ruler and a Stanley knife, and away you go. There's no mad adhesive or anything. You just peel back and you stick. And you can get them in loads of different styles. So you can get them in a subway style or a geometric. You can also get patterned if you want something a little bit louder. And you could do a combo of what you've done, as in you could paint and then do half of these stick-on tiles, and they're really, really affordable. I've seen them in places like obviously Woody's and B&Q, but I've also seen them in the likes of Deals.
Right. And actually, it is such a great way because when you glance at them first, when you open the door and glance at them, they look really real. They look like these gorgeous ceramic tiles that you'd spend ages and a lot of money putting up.
Yeah, and I did my little larger press over one weekend for, I think it cost me in total about €70 to do the whole larger press in a subway tile, and it just really elevates it.
Right, that is a great idea. Now, lighting. Is it worth doing anything special with the lighting for this type of room?
I think it's really important to have it bright because we need to be functional in that room. But you can do little things like adding on wall sconces, right? You don't need to go and get an electrician out because Amazon have you covered. They actually have rechargeable bulbs that you just charge and you pop in. So there's no need for an electrician, and you can add, again, a little bit of depth to a wall with a little attachment that kind of, again, makes it just that little bit elevated.
Oh, that's such a good idea. You've made my weekend busier automatically without trying, but fantastic tips there for you. Now, you've done a reel on this, as I said, and you've a couple on them, so people can find that at life@number2, which is your Instagram handle. And is there anything that you kind of feel you've left to do with that utility, or are you constantly finding things that you think, oh, do you know what, I'll just stick it in the utility room because that's my big bugbear?
So I have three little rooms. One is my under the stairs, one is my larder, and one is my utility room. Now, I sound again like I'm in a palatial mansion, but I'm absolutely not. But one of the ones where my ironing board is, I actually want to make a little seat cover for some, I got some IKEA storage, and it just looks a bit blah at the minute. It's that white box. So I want to blend it into the wall and get a nice velvet cushion made for it, so it could be a place to sit to put on a shoe.
Oh, there's posh for you now. Brilliant. All right. Well, listen, loads of inspiration there. I am going to be now busy because I'm now feeling compelled to do something with it. I love the idea of the decal tiles, the stick-on tiles, because there's some pretty patterns out there, and it makes such a difference. So maybe what I need to do is make better decisions about what goes in the room.
Oh.
Paul Kinsella, thanks a million for joining us with those tips on The Home Show. And as I say, you can find Paul on life@number2, and it's a lovely reels and lovely DIY tips there. Actually, he makes it look easily. Too easy, Paul. That's your problem. Too easy. All right. Listen, thanks a million, and we'll see you next time that you're on The Home Show with us.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for this week on the Home Show podcast. I hope you've enjoyed our mix of guests. And if you have any suggestions you'd like to make for us for guests or topics, well, of course, you can email us at thehomeshow@newstalk.com and you'll find me over on Insta and X. My thanks to producer Aoife Breen. Stephen McLoone was on sound. We'll do it all again next week. Have a fantastic bank holiday weekend.
The Home Show with Sinead Ryan. Saturday morning at 8 on News Talk.